Nashtapayashabadeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Sloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtiki. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, eighth chapter, verses 34 to 37. Queen Kunti's prayers. This is text 34. Bhāravatāraṇanyanye bhuvana vaivodata sirandhya bhuy bhārena jato yatma bhuvartita. Translation by Śrīla Prabhupāda. Others say that the world, being overburdened, like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. Mukkam karati vachalam pangam nankayate girim yat kipam tamaham vande shi gurum dinatarinam. Om Agyana Timrandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we heard yesterday how Kunti was explaining different contradictions about Krishna, the contradictions that non-devotees see. Devotees, they don't see these contradictions. For devotees, they understand why these appear contradictory to other people. But for others, it appears contradictory. So what are some of these things that appear contradictory or bewildering for the common man? What are some of the... Yes. Yes. Fear personified is afraid of Krishna, but Krishna is afraid of Yashoda's stick. What else? Inside and outside. Yes, an Alakshita. He's unborn, but he takes his birth. You had one, Krishna Priya? Yeah. He's partial and impartial. Personal and impersonal. Yes, we didn't even say that, but that's true. He's personal and impersonal. Active and inactive. Yeah, he's everywhere and he's not there at the same time. That's what Bhagavad Gita says. Everything is in me, but I am not in them, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so these are some of the contradictions. And then we heard some of the reasons why Krishna comes. First thing, Kunti said, Krishna comes here to glorify the pious kings, like King Yadu. And he comes here as the son of Devaki and Vasudeva because they prayed for him to come. And also he comes to protect the devotees and to kill the envious. So today in this first verse, she says that other people say that Krishna has come because of the earth, the condition of the earth. Remember in the beginning of the 10th canto, how all the demigods along with Bhumi Devi went to the shore of the ocean of milk, and they were praying. Lord Brahma was meditating on Vishnu, and they were praying for an incarnation to come and alleviate the burden of the earth, because there were so many demons. So that's what this verse is about. Lord Brahma prayed, and so he appeared to diminish the burden of the earth. So what the question arises, that why does this world become overburdened? Is it because of overpopulation? No. Because of overpopulation of sinful people. Too many demons. If it was full of devotees, then the earth would be happy. It would not be a burden for the earth if it was all devotees, overpopulation on the earth. Because enough is provided. As soon as a living entity is born on this earth, then the Lord provides for his maintenance from the day of his birth. So there's never a question of overpopulation. But at this point, there was an increase of the population of demons, and therefore the earth was overburdened. There is a verse in the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam which is spoken by Bali Maharaj. And this was when he was saying that why he should keep his vow of truthfulness and give the donation to Vamanadeva. So this is what Bali Maharaj said. He was talking about this subject. On the surface of the earth, there are many great mountains and oceans that are very heavy, and Mother Earth has no difficulty carrying them, but she feels very much overburdened when she carries even one person who is a liar. And so this is the problem of the earth. This is the burden of the earth on sinful people. It is said that in Kali Yuga, lying is a common affair. No one is free from the sinful reactions of speaking lies. So this is the purport. Under the circumstances, one can just imagine how this has overburdened the earth and indeed the entire universe. You just tell one lie, and this is a burden for the earth, and Prabhupada says even for the universe. Anyone who tells a lie. So this is a problem. Chanaka Pandit gives the example how a bad son is a burden on the father. He says, what is the use of getting a son who is neither learned nor a devotee? Chanaka Pandit says that a bad son is just like having a cataract on the eye. Cataract is a disease that goes on your eyes, and it covers your eyes, and it's very painful, and gradually you lose your sight and you become blind. So he compares, Chanaka Pandit compares a bad son to this disease, that he is simply giving trouble, simply pain, and no pleasure. So just like a mother feels great pain when her children misbehave, when her children are disrespectful, when her children are naughty, in the same way, Mother Earth feels pain when all these demons are living on her surface. Yes? Well, that's also a burden too. But see, the only reason he was... Well, this is an example given by Bali Maharaj, because he was being asked to tell a lie. So therefore he gave this example of why... That's why he gave this example. I don't know why technically so, but why this example is given is because that was what he... That was the offense that he was being asked to do, the sin that Bali Maharaj was being asked by his so-called guru to lie, to break his vow. So therefore he said this. And obviously he was quoting Shastra. He had heard this from Shastra. Otherwise it wouldn't be in Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes? What's that? Yes. Mutra, yes. Yes, that's right. So yes, this is the problem with the population on the earth. The Aru dynasty was also a burden on the earth, but the earth was not feeling that the Aru dynasty was a burden. But Krishna, of course, understood that it would become a burden after he left the planet. So therefore, Krishna took the Aru dynasty with him after he left. So, but generally speaking, a good son is not a burden on the earth. So in Bhagavad Gita, it is said, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati parata, that when there is a rise in irreligion and a decline in religion, then Krishna comes. Dharmasya glani. When people forget what is dharma, then Krishna must come and he must do something. He must alleviate the burden. Just like if you have a house, a master has a house, and he leaves the house, and the servants are taking care of the house. So sometimes it happens that the servants forget the master is there, and he starts enjoying the master's property. This happens, and he misappropriates. So in the same way, people forget Krishna, then they misuse this earth. They misuse the earthly planet, and they exploit it instead of using it for his service. So when people forget Krishna, when they forget the purpose of life, when they forget what is the purpose of this earth, then Krishna comes. One time in London, in the airport, Srila Prabhupada was asked by the reporters, why have you come here? So Srila Prabhupada said, to teach you what you have forgotten. So what is that in one word? Krishna. He said God, because they probably didn't know who Krishna was. So he said, that is God. You have forgotten God? I've come here to teach you what is God. So this is the purpose of the representative of God, and this is the purpose why Krishna comes. And Srila Prabhupada also explained that at the present moment, we have such a burden of demons on this earth, but Krishna has actually come. How has Krishna come? No. Harinam, Maha Mantra. Also, Srimad Bhagavatam. As soon as Krishna left the planet, then Srimad Bhagavatam has risen like the shining sun to give knowledge to the people who want it, who are suffering in this age, and who actually want knowledge. So the holy name, Kali Kali Nama Rupe, Krishna Avatar, and also Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna Svatama Bhagate, when Krishna has left, then this Bhagavatam has come. So people, Prabhupada said, if people just chant Hare Krishna, then they can change the whole situation of today's civilization. And Prabhupada did say that the time will come when history will record that this movement has saved the world in its darkest hour. So obviously the darkest hour hasn't come yet. There's still work for us to do to save the world. But anyway, we're making a small attempt here. So the earth was feeling actually very unhappy because Krishna had left. When Krishna left the planet, in the 16th chapter of the first canto, the earth said that Lakshmiji, she was living in a beautiful place in a forest of lotus flowers, and she gave up this place to worship, to perform great austerities, just to get a place at Krishna's lotus feet. So one of the themes of today's class is Krishna's lotus feet. So therefore, since we're talking about Krishna's lotus feet a lot today, I've put them up here so you can get a good look at Krishna's lotus feet and what's the marks that are on his feet. So the earth planet, she was describing that I got very special powers to supersede the fortune of all the three planetary systems. Why? Because I was decorated with these footprints. So the earth felt herself very fortunate just because on her surface, Krishna's footprints were there, Krishna's lotus feet. But in the end, when I felt I was so fortunate, the Lord left me. Then she says, who therefore can tolerate the pangs of separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So when he traversed my surface, I would be immersed in the dust of his lotus feet and thus would be sumptuously covered with grass, which appeared like hairs standing on me out of pleasure. So this was the feeling of the earth when Krishna was here. And before Krishna came, she was feeling the burden. Then when Krishna came, she was relieved of the burden. And then when Krishna left, again, she had another burden, and that was of separation from Krishna. So I'd like to just to take a few minutes, because we've heard a lot of reasons have been given by Kunti why Krishna has come, or why Krishna came 5,000 years ago. So I'd just like to discuss a few of the other incarnations of Krishna and why they came and compare it to why Krishna came. So I'll name an incarnation and you can raise your hand and tell me why he came. Now this one is very similar to the reason why Krishna came that's being given here in this verse, and that is Varaha. He also had something, yes. Hiranyaksha. Okay. Right. To uplift the earth from the lower regions, Varaha came. Okay? And he also came for one more reason. What's that? Yeah, he came from Lord Brahma's nostril, and the sages were praying to him as the Lord of Sacrifice. What was another thing he did? Kill. Yeah, he killed Hiranyaksha. He killed Hiranyaksha. Kusha grass, yes. Kusha grass is from the hairs on Varaha's body. When some of his hairs fell out, and it grew as fell in the earth, it grew as Kusha grass. So because of Lord Varaha, we have our Kusha mats that are very auspicious and used in sacrificial performances. And because the sages described that Varaha was the form of sacrifice. So then Kurma, why did Kurma come? Yeah. Yes. Yes, he was providing the pivot for Mandara Hill to churn the ocean of milk. What's another reason why he came? Personal, very personal reason. Yeah, his back was itching, and so he wanted somebody to scratch his back. Very difficult for if you're a tortoise, scratch your back. So therefore, the mountain was scratching his back and also polishing his ornaments at the same time. So then we have Matsya. Why did Matsya come? Matsya, fish. Protect the scriptures, yes, yes. At the devastation and the scriptures were lost, again he gave that knowledge to Satyavrat. Satyavrat, was it? Satyavrat. No, not Agastya Muni. It was Satyavrata. Satyavrat. And he became Vaivasvatamanu, yes? Yeah. Yeah, right. Yes, he saved Satyavrata and the sages on the boat and all seeds and living entities like Noah's Ark, yeah. Yes. 8 million miles long, fish. Okay? And Nishinga protect his devotee, Prahlad, yes. And Kihiranyakashipu, okay? Vamanadev. Yes, to deliver, actually to deliver Bali Maharaj from his, and his other reason, that give back the kingdom to Indra. So people may look at that pastime, they may think, oh, actually he came, you know, to give the kingdom to Indra. But actually, the deeper reason is to deliver his devotee, Bali Maharaj, from ignorance that he was in, from being attached to all that heavenly kingdom. Yes. Bringing the Ganga, Vamana, yes, right, that's good. Yes. Vamana also caused the Ganga to come to this earth and below. That's very good, thank you. Causing the Ganga to come. Parashuram. Yeah, to alleviate, again to relieve the earth of the burden of the Kshatriyas. Very similar to the reason Krishna came. Very similar. And he will actually, in the future, he will be one of the seven sages. Now we have seven sages like Vyas, he's not a sage. There's seven great sages who are in charge of the knowledge of the universe. And he'll be one of them in the next incarnation of Indra. When they change Manus, then Parashuram will be one of the great sages. There's seven now, Vishishta, Vishvamitra, and I can't remember. All of them. You want to look it up? Okay, look it up. The seven sages. Yes, in the sky. You can see their planets at night. Marichi, I don't think. I don't think so. A tree? Tree? I don't know, actually. But if I see the list, it's in the Bhagavatam. Yeah, Bhrigu. Yeah. Because there's so many great sages, but which are those seven? I know Vishishta, Vishvamitra. Who? Treya. Probably Atreya. Let's see. Is it there altogether? Top of the list. Okay. Yeah, well, many sages are here, but we don't know who are the seven. Oh, I see. Pratu. Yeah, these are some of the great sages. There are many, many sages. Vishishta, Bhrigu, Pulastya, Angira. So these are some of the seven sages. So here in this material world, oh yeah, we'll go to the next verse actually. I'm jumping ahead. Then the last incarnation I wanted to ask you about was Ram, Lord Ram. Kiyo Ravana. Yes? Husband and wife, and also another ideal he was showing. King, yes, a perfect king. Perfect king, perfect. And that's part of it. Part of being a perfect king is he has only one wife. Most kings, they have so many wives, but Ram only took one wife. Yes.
Can
The reason for the earth. Oh yeah, why we have the earth here? Oh, that's given in the fourth canto when it talks about Prithu Maharaj. Because Prithu was threatening to kill the earth. Prithu was saying to the earth, you are not providing grains for my subjects, therefore I will kill you. So then she was giving him all the reasons why he shouldn't kill her and why we need the earth. She says, no, if you kill me, then who will support all these living entities here? Who will support? Prithu said, I will. So then she got really scared. So the purpose of the earth is to provide a place for all the living entities to perform impious activities, and get the reactions. Nowhere else in the universe can you actually perform pious, impious activities. The earth is the place where you actually can. This is the karma kshetra. It's the place where you do your activities and you get the reactions. In heavenly planets, you just use up your pious activities. And in the other planets, you just use up your impious activities. You suffer until you come here. Yeah. No, because they are powerful people that we cannot imitate. It says that you cannot criticize. And there's actually a Sanskrit verse which I can't remember right now. That says that powerful person can do anything, like Krishna, like the sun, like Indra, and you cannot criticize them. And so this is the answer. Yeah. Yes. The sun can evaporate urine. Right. The powerful controllers, they may make mistakes, but because they're so powerful in their pious activities, in their devotion to the Lord, therefore it burns up. If they do something wrong, then it burns it up, it eats it up. Yeah. Anyway, it's kind of off the subject right here. Yeah. Yeah. The whole purpose there is to enjoy. So therefore you might get carried away. What can I say? So then you come down. If you go beyond, there's also limits there. And if you go beyond the limits, then again you have to come down here. You can only stay there for so long. Well, I'll just say something very briefly, because it's a very long subject. But the whole purpose of human form of life is to make a solution to the problems of life. You're supposed to, you can have eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in regulation according to the Vedic injunctions. And if you do not follow these injunctions, and then it's impious and you go down. Now in the heavenly planets, there's no Vedic principles. There are Vedic principles, but you don't get any reactions. You simply enjoy. And that's why only here on this earthly planet is it possible to get liberation and go back to Godhead. And that's why the demigods want to take birth here while this movement is going on. So we should appreciate what a wonderful gift we have in this human form of life. And we should not waste it. And if anyone in this human form of life wastes his life in enjoyment, then it's the greatest loss. He can become even the demigods want to come here. Because there, you do pious activities here. Of course, the only pious activity at the present is devotional service. So you do some devotional service, you end up in the heavenly planets, you enjoy. But it's a waste of time, actually. Better to go back to Godhead. Okay, last thing. And then we go on. Yeah, so then if they don't want it, then they won't do it. But if they do have that desire, then they will get into it. So it means that they do want it. Yeah. You have desire. Yeah, desire is there, and even the highest demigods can fall down. So it's not a question of you're free. It's not liberation to go to the heavenly planets. So even a devotee who gets past the Nartana Vritti, he's on a better platform than the demigods. One who gets freed from these material desires, even if he's living on this earth planet, he's in a better position than the demigods. Nectar Devotion, it says that demigods worship a person who is always engaged in chanting, in offering prayers to the Supreme Lord. So what a wonderful position is a devotee. We don't appreciate, but actually devotees are wonderful. They're in a very wonderful position. So let's go on. The next verse is very nice because it gives us a very concise summary of the whole material world, why we're here, and how to get out. It's just in a few lines. The next verse, verse 35, which is actually the purpose of a human form of life. I'll just chant because not so much time. Bhavesmin klishamananam avidya kama karma bhishavana smaranarhani karishani tikechana. Translation. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned soul suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. So the first line, bhavesmin, klishamananam, the whole material existence. Bhava. Bhava means material existence. Klishamananam means so much trouble. So much trouble, so much burden we're experiencing. Prabhupada said this one line is worth thousands of years of research work. The people are trying to figure out how to solve the problems of life. So here we have it in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. It explains how the living entity is taking birth, where he's going, everything. So, klishamananam, bhavesmin klishamananam, means the struggle for existence in this world. Everybody is struggling, no matter who you are in this world, big or small. So then, the next line explains why. Why the struggle for existence? Because of avidya, ignorance. Bhavesmin klishamananam, avidya, ignorance. And what is the nature of the ignorance? Kama, karma vi. That because we have desire to enjoy kama, then we do karma. Karma be. We perform so much work. So everybody is suffering here. We don't have to argue this point. And it actually is described that only two categories of living entities are not suffering in this world. And that is the lowest of fools and the liberated soul, the Paramahansa. Paramahansa is happy. He's liberated. He's gone beyond the modes of nature. And the lowest of fool is happy. He's enjoying, the hog is enjoying his stool. So he doesn't know he's suffering. But in between, everybody's suffering. Yes. Above the modes. Yes, above the modes. Well, he's, yeah, below the modes. He's in the modes. Actually, human being who is in ignorance, he suffers. I mean, he enjoys. He thinks he's happy, actually. Thinks he's happy. So why is everybody in anxiety all the time? Prahlad Maharaj explains, asad grahat, means that they have accepted something temporary as reality, as enjoyable. The temporary things. This is their happiness. This is security. This is stability. This is what people are accepting. And so therefore, they're always in anxiety because these things are not secure. They're not stable. And you have to work very, very hard. So much trouble, klishamananam, so taking trouble just like an ass. What is the ass described in Bhagavad Gita? What's his name in Sanskrit? Mudha. Just like a mudha, people are working so hard, so much burden, they can't even bear this burden. And the reason they have created this work themselves, because of kama, because of desire, material desire. So then the last two lines, how to get free from this anxiety. This is, let's see, what does it say here? Shavana smaranarhani karishan iti kechana. So hearing, remembering, worshipping, doing these activities for Krishna. This will relieve you of all your anxiety. So then here in this verse, Kunti is saying that you have actually come to introduce this system by which all living entities can get relief from the hard struggle for existence. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he says, sarva dharmam pritya mam ekam sharanam vraja. So in this case, Srila Prabhupada, he translates it different according to time, place, and circumstance. So in this place, Srila Prabhupada says, "You rascal, give up all your nonsense and surrender to me." He's just translating Krishna as saying it in this way. And he said, this is Krishna's very nice mercy. He's trying to get us to surrender, most confidential knowledge. So Kunti is saying that you have come to teach these rascals that they should engage in your devotional service, hearing and chanting. So Bhagavatam, the entire Bhagavatam is glorification of Krishna, hearing and chanting. So we can hear Bhagavatam, we can chant the holy name, as we said before, these are the two incarnations in this age of Kali. But Prabhupada said, if you have no ability to chant or your mind is so disturbed that you cannot fix it on Krishna, then you just go in the temple and sit in front of the deities and look at the deities. So if you can't do anything else, just go and look at the deities and you can see how nicely dressed is Radharani, how nicely dressed is Krishna. Even a child can do this. We see children coming up. I saw one little girl the other day she picked some flowers and she was going to give them to the deities. Small little girl. So even the children, they can participate in this process. And Prabhupada said that, if you're more expert, if you're more intelligent, you can offer prayers. If there's nothing you can do, just go and look at the deities. And sometimes he'll say, you just go to a class and sit down and hear it, even if you don't understand. It doesn't matter. You just go and hear when it's going on, when the kirtan's going on. And if you're very expert, then you can do arhana, you can do worship, Srila Prabhupada said. So here, shavana, smarana, and arhana. These processes are given. Of course, everything takes practice. So here, in the purport, I'd like to read Prabhupada in paragraph 2, in the beginning of paragraph 2, in this purport of verse 35. Prabhupada translates, Prabhupada describes the 9 processes of devotional service, but one of the processes he changes the name completely. So let's see. Yeah, let's see if you can catch it. Here, the Lord, however, out of his causeless mercy, because he is more merciful to the suffering living beings than they can expect, appears before them and renovates the principles of devotional service comprised of hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, cooperating, and surrendering unto him. So here's a new one, cooperating. Cooperating. Yeah, there's only 8. One's missing. Well, serving, we've got serving. Serving could be serving the lotus feet, serving. So which one's missing here? Friendship, sakyam, cooperating. Yes. So how is friendship like cooperating? You have to cooperate with your friend. And that's what Prabhupada asked us, that your love for me will be shown how well you cooperate after I leave. So cooperation means friendship with the devotees. It's a very important thing. So here, Prabhupada, it's very amazing that he changed the word from friendship to cooperating. I remember he wrote one letter to me when I was a new devotee. And 3 things he asked me to do. He said, you should go on sincerely and enthusiastically pushing on this movement, and at the same time you should cooperate with your God brothers and God sisters. So 3 things he told me I should do. Essence of instruction. Be sincere, be enthusiastic, and cooperate. Now this is very, very difficult, actually, in this age of Kali, because it's the age of quarrel. Nobody wants to cooperate with anybody. Very, very difficult. And that means friendship. Friendship, otherwise, if you don't cooperate, you have no friends. So friendship with devotees, this is one of the items of Nectar of Instruction, right? Is Dadati Pratigrihanati. Yes. That you offer and you receive gifts and food, you exchange food, and also you inquire confidentially and you reveal your mind. Yes. So these things are part of friendship with devotees. So here it's, I just thought that struck me when I read that how he said cooperating instead of friendship. Sometimes these things happen. Because you read this over and over, usually you just read it through, okay, hearing, chanting, remembering, and you don't even read the whole list. But here, this is very interesting. So let's go into verse 36, because 36 is an expansion of this verse. Hearing and chanting and remembering. So I'll just chant myself again. Shinvanti kayanti gunanta vikshnasa smaranti nandanti tavehitam janaha te eva pasyanti achirena tavakam pava pravaho paramam padam bhujam. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. So now she is giving the result of chanting and hearing and remembering. And here we have on the board, you will see Krishna's lotus feet. So I thought we should get the result, even if you can't see Krishna's feet in your heart. We will see it here on the board. Result of this verse we will obtain today. So Kunti has explained the purpose of Krishna's appearance. But although Krishna came, many people didn't understand him. So that's why she's giving these nice explanations. And here in the purport, paragraph 2, there is a nice statement. In continuation of what we just read, there are different transcendental activities of the Lord. So this is referring to the nine processes of devotional service, what we just read. She said, and Prabhupada says here, and each and every one of them is competent to bestow the desired result. So Prabhupada says, if you chant, or if you hear, or if you do worship, any one of them, if you do perfectly, you'll get the result. But here he makes a catch. Here's another a clause here. Provided the hearing process is perfect. So you can't do without hearing. Hearing must be there. No matter what you're doing, you have to hear. So this is very, very important. Prabhupada is stressing it. And that's all. It's the first thing. Shinvanti, Gayanti. Lord Brahma said, you don't have to change your position. Stane stita shrutikatam tanuvam anobhir. That you just stay in your position, no matter who you are or what you are, and just hear about Krishna. You have a question? Well, here's the answer. I have a lecture here by Srila Prabhupada, where I think that will answer your question. So I'll read what Prabhupada said here. Pariksit Maharaj did not do anything else but sit down before Shukadeva Goswami and hear for the last 7 days of his life. If one simply hears, so this is quoting, I'm quoting Srila Prabhupada, if one simply hears without doing anything else, if one simply sits down in the temple and whenever there is talk of Bhagavad Gita, one goes on hearing, that will be enough. That's what he says. He's lecturing on this verse, this particular verse. He says this. Means anything. Even if you do not understand, he's going on here. Even if you do not understand, please hear. Yes. This is a lecture on Queen Kunti's prayers. Here I have Mayapur 74, 1836. This particular verse. Yeah, this is Mayapur. 1836, Mayapur 74. And then he goes on, even if you do not understand, please hear. The vibration, the mantra, will help you. Grammatical or scholarly understanding is not very important. One may not know Sanskrit grammar, but bhakti is a pratihata, unimpeachable. Nothing can check the progress of bhakti. Therefore, one should simply adopt this process of hearing, as recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anybody knows where Lord Chaitanya recommended this process of hearing? Kurma Brahman. I'm thinking of another example. Kurma Brahman, actually, he said, he told him to preach. Jari, isn't it? Jari Deko Tai Koho Krishna Upadesh. Yeah, he said, he told him to preach. So not for him, there's somebody else. He told him to speak, actually, preach. Somebody else Lord Chaitanya was talking to. It was Ramananda Roy. And actually, it was Ramananda Roy who said it. Lord Chaitanya was questioning Ramananda Roy. And what is the ultimate process? Is it for or the ultimate goal. So then he, Ramananda Rai was giving so many answers in the beginning. Ranashram, he said, no, this is external. And then he said, okay, just surrender. He said, no, this is external. He quoted Sarvadharma Pritityaja. He said, no, this is... So then finally he said, this verse, Dhanestita Shutikatam Tanuvamanopir. It's a quote from Lord Brahma. Simply remain in your position and simply hear. And that is, and you will be able to conquer the unconquerable. That's the end of the verse. And then Prabhupada explains why he rejected Sarvadharma and Paritya. Because we would think, well, this is, you know, this is a very high thing. The end of Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada said that in this age of Kali, everyone is cats and dogs, so they're not going to surrender. If you tell them surrender to Krishna, so why should I surrender? He said, but they can hear. Just listen, just hear. People can do that. Age of Kali, they can't do Sarvadharma Pratitya. It's very difficult. They can't surrender to Krishna. So therefore, whatever your position is, just hear. Just hear about Krishna. This is also recommended in Bhagavad Gita as being superior to karma, jnana, and yoga. In chapter 13, those of you who have been studying Bhagavad Gita, I think it's verse 26. Verse 25 describes how karma, jnana, yoga, how in this way you can realize super soul. But it says even if you don't know any path, you don't know any Vedic path, you simply hear and you will get perfection. So this is the process for this Kali Yuga. Nobody can do any of the Vedic paths. Just like another time Prabhupada quotes Sarvadharma Pritya, Mame Kam Sharanam Vraja, give up all religion. So Prabhupada said, actually, you've already given up all religion. You don't have to worry about that part. Just surrender to me. Already Sarvadharma, that's already happening all over the world. Nobody cares about Dharma. People have already given up all Dharma. That's not a problem. But the surrender part, that's hard. So Sarvadharma, Mame Kam, just accept only Krishna. And that's why he was successful in the Western countries, because there was no Dharma. So therefore, they had no choice. They didn't have any other demigods or Kali or Durga or Shiva. They only knew Krishna, so it was easy to give up all religion because they already had given it up. Because it is special mercy for Kali Yuga, and that's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see in his incarnation that he was accepting people who had no dharma as Haridas Thakur, Namacharya. People who were outside of the Hindu culture, he was accepting as Acharya, as Goswami. Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were outside of the Hindu culture. They were rejected because they were serving Mohammedans. They were serving Muslims. He made them Goswamis. They wrote so many books. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving a special concession in this age of Kali. So we should take it. Very special concession. Very special mercy. And Srila Prabhupada is the authorized representative to distribute that mercy. So therefore, the impossible became possible. And that was his miracle. Yeah, he just went there, sat underneath a tree, and he got people, he changed. He changed people. So many people, so many Swamis went to America before Srila Prabhupada. But they didn't change anything. In fact, they became contaminated. Before Srila Prabhupada went there, he was advised by some sannyasis who were in India who had gone to the West. They said, you know, when you go to the West, you will have to change your clothes, you'll have to wear a shirt and pants, and you'll have to eat with a fork and a spoon. And what Srila Prabhupada said to that man, Srila Prabhupada said, no, I am not going to change. I will change them. They will have to dress like me, and they will have to eat like me. So that's what he did. So this is such a miracle that Srila Prabhupada has done. Nobody could do it. They talk, and they were wondering, how is this going to happen? Now it's predicted, you know, Lord Chaitanya's name is going to be heard, and nobody could figure out how this is going to happen. So Srila Prabhupada did it. And so the credit goes to Srila Prabhupada that there's a verse, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahe Tara Pravartana. Unless you have the Shakti of Krishna Shakti, you cannot preach. So therefore, he had the power of Krishna so that he could actually transform people who were completely adharmic, who had no idea of Krishna, who had no idea of what it means to be a human being even. And he transformed them into Vaishnavas. So this is the miracle. Oftentimes, people challenge Prabhupada, oh, you know, because so many yogis are there who show miracles. They produce gold, they produce rasgulla, they produce so many things. They cure somebody from some disease. So they say, okay, what's your miracle? So he would point to his Western disciple. He said, this is my miracle, that I have transformed them from mlechas into Vaishnavas. So this is, he said, I didn't do any magic. He said that, I didn't do any magic. He says, I'm only presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is. That's all I did. He says, if I have any credit, I'm just presenting Bhagavad Gita without any change, without any contamination. And that is the magic. And the magic is coming from there. We see, like I know, I read another Swami's Bhagavad Gita before I read Srila Prabhupada's. And he only translated the first six chapters. Because beyond that there's bhakti, you know, he couldn't. So the first six chapters he could manage to translate it without any bhakti somehow. But after that it was not possible. So he only translated the first six chapters, and I only got up to the second chapter. I was so bored with it that I couldn't read it. And Srila Prabhupada's, of course, I read many, many times before I joined the temple. So it's quite you see the potency that Srila Prabhupada had, his words. He would choose every word very carefully when he was translating. So his words had the potency to change people's lives. Prabhupada says here in this lecture, just by hearing, and then he says, chanting also. He says, of course, if you have heard properly, you will chant. It's not you just sit and hear your whole life and don't do anything, but if that's all you can do, then do that. This is the point. It's not that you remain dumb, but if you're like that, if that's the way you are and you can't preach and you can't chant, then just hear. I know one boy who became a devotee, he's deaf. A deaf boy. He could not hear. He's born deaf. And he became a devotee, and somehow he started chanting the Maha Mantra. And then by the association of devotees, he started to speak, actually. Although he was born deaf and dumb from his birth, but by living in association of devotees, he started to actually speak. And then he went on to preach to other deaf people, dumb people. Arhana. Pardon me? Well, deity worship, for that you need another whole course, deity worship. So I can't really teach that in this course, but you can consult with Mukunda Datta Prabhu. No, there's only one way in this age, and that's given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to chant the holy names. Everything is there in the holy name. Whatever problem, whatever provocation, by chanting the holy name, then you can overcome. That's why, because Kali Yuga is such a difficult place. The earth is a very nice place in Satyayuga. Everybody's Paramahansa. And just by living here, you become pious. Everything is pious. It's only Kali Yuga that's very, very difficult. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the easiest method of self-realization. Just chant Hare Krishna. Just hear, even if you can't chant. Just hear the holy name. And there's no impediment. We saw this deaf boy. He couldn't hear. He couldn't speak, but somehow he was chanting his rounds. And I met another deaf girl when I was preaching. She was writing. She said, my guru told me I have to write every day 3 hours. So she was writing her rounds, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, because she couldn't speak or hear. This. Yeah. He's from Bombay. Yeah. I don't know what happened. That was many years ago. It was about 20 years ago. No, it was after. After, yeah. It was about 82, 83, like that. It was in Bombay. Yeah, this deaf girl I met. So you see, see how many much more problem these people have. And we have all our senses. So why we cannot do this? Yes. Okay, maybe I'll answer it. Yeah. That's a very difficult question. You have to ask that person. Because I never experienced that. You have to, so that's something for a deaf person to answer you. Deaf devotee. Yeah. So you can tell her after class. You can explain. Okay, so I'll just go on with this verse.
What does it mean that there's also said that there's no material impediment?
Yes, right. No material impediment. It's a spiritual sound, and actually the soul hears. The soul does hear it. Because I know Malati Prabhu was telling that when she was completely unconscious, she was in a coma. None of her senses were working, her ears, nothing. But the devotees were chanting and she could hear, the soul could hear. Even though her ears were not functioning and none of her senses were functioning, she could hear the holy name in that unconscious state. So somehow it's possible. Because the vibration is not material, it's spiritual, as you said. Thank you for that. Spiritual sound vibration. So I'll just go on. When Prabhupada was talking about this, how even if you chant, even if you make mistake when you chant, still Krishna will accept it. He said in the early days, the devotees, instead of saying Shri Guru Charana Padma, they were saying Shri Guru Charana Padma. They were saying, I worship the cow, the guru who is cow. So Prabhupada said, so you're calling me cow, but I don't take offense. Because I know that your feeling is sincere and you don't mean it, that I am a cow. So sometimes, there is, as you say, there's no material impediment. Prabhupada says, I do not protest that you are calling me a cow. So because I take the feeling. And so therefore, this word here is in this verse, let's see, verse 36, Shinvanti Grinanti, Gayanti Grinanti. Grinanti means to accept. So that means that honest people, they will accept if they see a devotee who is really trying hard, even though he cannot pronounce properly or he cannot say something properly. Somebody who is actually a good soul, who is an honest devotee, he will accept. Yes, this is nice. This is very nice. And these people, they're trying to chant Hare Krishna. And they're trying to follow Krishna consciousness. He will appreciate and he will accept. Abhikshnasa means continuously. And also another point here is that in the beginning of devotional service, sometimes we were very enthusiastic and sometimes we're not. So that's called unsteady bhajana kriya. Unsteady bhajana kriya. So, but as we make progress in devotional service, we come to the point where it becomes much easier. Now we have to drag our mind back to concentrate on the chanting. We always forget Krishna. We always have to bring our mind back. But when you get to asakti, when you get to the higher levels, then the opposite will be true. Your mind will be so wonderful, it will be your friend, and the mind will take you to Krishna. And you'll think, oh, how did I go to Krishna? I wasn't even thinking of Krishna. And so your mind will be your friend. There is one quote in Nectar of Devotion that one devotee, he said, oh, today I saw the lotus feet of Krishna in my mind, and I wasn't even trying. They just came in my mind. So this is the result of continuously practicing and chanting, that the holy name will come in your mind. You'll hear kirtan, even though you're not trying to chant or hear. It'll just come in your mind. Sometimes you may experience this. You go to the 24-hour kirtan and you hear the kirtan, and then the next day the melody will come in your mind. Or maybe when you wake up in the morning, or maybe even in the middle of the night, you hear this melody coming in your... Or you'll remember something. Just without even trying, it just comes. And you just find yourself singing the melody. Yes. That's right. You hear, you remember these things. I know the thing happened to me because I'm so, like, so many times a day I'm saying Narayanam Namaskritya. So yesterday I was putting on my tilak, and and instead of the tilak mantra, I just said Narayanam Namaskritya Narangcha. And I couldn't remember the mantra even. I was asking so, you know, I forgot the mantra. I was just saying Narayanam Namaskritya. It's so many times a day I say it in the class at home because I study Bhagavatam. So these things happen, you know, it just becomes automatic. But that you do things, that they just stay in your mind like that. And I couldn't, every time I put on tilak, for the last few times, I couldn't remember the mantra. And I asked Vishaka last night, what's the mantra? But anyway, these things happen. So then what happens when you get to this, of course, you get to asakti, then you feel pleasure. Here it says nandanti. This is the result of all this chanting, hearing. You feel pleasure. Otherwise you can't go on. So, and then after that it says sa eva pashyant yachirena tavakam. After you become happy, then you will see Krishna's lotus feet. So you may say, okay, well, yeah, maybe I'll see Krishna's lotus feet. It'll take a long, long time. And Prabhupada says, no, achirena, not Prabhupada, Kunti says, achirena, immediately. Very, very quickly you will see. So here in the beginning of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, Supreme Lord Shri Krishna cannot be seen by our present conditional vision. In order to see him, one has to change his present vision by developing a different condition of life full of spontaneous love of Godhead. When Shri Krishna is present personally on the face of the globe, not everyone could see him as Supreme Personality of Godhead. Materialists like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, Jarasandha, and Shishupala were highly qualified personalities by acquisition of material assets, but they were unable to appreciate the presence of the Lord. Therefore, even though the Lord may be present before our eyes, it's not possible to see him unless we have the necessary vision. So this is, we see Krishna was standing in front of these people, living, breathing, and still they didn't understand this is God. So this is quite amazing when you think about it. And he was doing so many amazing things, he was right in front of these people, and they couldn't see. But the same thing is happening today, that Krishna is there, the deity in the temple, Krishna is the deity, and people, they do not see. They come, they look, they don't see Krishna. Devotee sees. Devotee can see that this is Krishna standing in front of me. So by following this process, then you will see Krishna. Here it says, also, pava pravaho paramam. So this means current. Pravaha means current. So sometimes you see, if you're at a river or an ocean, very strong current is there. So this current is the modes of nature. This current is the modes of nature. Goodness, so ignorance, when you're in ignorance, then you're down at the bottom of the current. When you're in passion, you're struggling to keep your head up. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. In goodness, your head is up above the water. You think, okay, now I'm enjoying. Now my head's above water. But actually, you're in the current, so you can't really be happy. So if you do these things, here it says the current will stop. And where will the current stop? At Krishna's lotus feet. That's where the current will stop. If you do this shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, all these things, then you will end up at Krishna's lotus feet. So this is the process. And so first we have to see the lotus feet. That's the beginning. First two cantos of Bhagavatam, and then we progress up to the smiling face, last canto. So this is what Kunti is teaching here. I'll read something about Krishna's lotus feet. This is from the first canto, 11th chapter, and then that will be the end of the class. This is very nice about Krishna's lotus feet. Pure devotees are always hankering after the lotus feet of the Lord. So we often wonder why, but what's so special about Krishna's lotus feet? So here we find out. The lotus has a kind of honey, which is transcendentally relished by the devotees. They are like the bees who are always after the honey. So now Srila Prabhupada, he quotes Sri Rupa Goswami's prayer about this honey, and Rupa Goswami is comparing himself to the bee. He says, O my Lord Krishna, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like the bee, it is after some honey. Kindly therefore give my bee mind a place at your lotus feet, which are the sources for all transcendental honey. I know even big demigods like Brahma do not see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet, even though they are engaged in deep meditation for years together. Still, O infallible one, my ambition is such, for you are very merciful to your surrendered devotees. O Madhava, I know also I have no genuine devotion for the service of your lotus feet, but because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly kingdom. Therefore, I am very much attracted by them. O Supreme Eternal, please, therefore, let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet so that eternally I may be able to relish the taste of your transcendental service. So Srila Prabhupada explains why the devotees are satisfied at the lotus feet of the Lord, because there is this taste that you get when you're at Krishna's lotus feet. So Prabhupada says they have no ambition even to see his beautiful face, because they're so satisfied at his lotus feet. So Prabhupada says that the devotees are humble by nature, and the Lord is always seen leaning towards such humble devotees. So devotees are at the lotus feet, but Krishna is leaning towards those devotees. He's always leaning towards them. So this is the quote. This is from 1st Canto, 11th chapter, verse 26, purport. So I'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments on these verses? Yes? Manamali. Right. So the main thing is to get this great desire, this great eagerness. So this thief, he saw the jewels of Krishna. He heard in the satsanga, oh, he's very rich. He has so many jewels. He went to see, and he was calling for Krishna. He went to Vrindavan. He found Krishna. Krishna came. And I also heard it told that he asked Krishna, can you give me some of your jewels? You have so many. And Krishna said, no, my mother will be angry. I cannot give you. So anyway, then he became purified. There's also another story about that, like that with Srila Prabhupada. You remember, I was thinking of that too. One devotee, my godbrother, Haridas. You know that story? So Haridas Prabhu, he saw a picture of Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was wearing a beautiful gold watch. So he thought, okay, I got to meet this man. I have to steal his watch. So he was eager to meet Srila Prabhupada. And then when he met Srila Prabhupada, he got purified also. Although he was from a low background, he was like a thief, he was like underworld person. He became purified and he became a devotee. And Prabhupada told him that, I will give you so much opulence, don't worry. And it happened actually, he became extremely wealthy. And what's that? Yeah. Oh, cereal. Acha. Oh yeah, he's doing that Star TV program. Yeah, he's doing that. Star TV. There's a program that's advertised. 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Yes. Oh, that's good. Yeah. So he and another story about him. One time, I saw this on the. He was telling his memoirist about Srila Prabhupada. So he was going to travel to the West, so he needed to get a passport. And when the people at the passport office, they said, okay, we need to know your father's name. And he went back, he said, oh, I don't know my father's name. He didn't know who his father was, actually. So then Prabhupada said, so how is it going? You got your passport? He said, no, I don't have my passport. They said, I have to put my father's name on my passport. So Prabhupada said, give me the passport. Prabhupada took the passport. Prabhupada wrote his name. It's your father's name. Because that's the kind of birth. Actually, Narada Muni had that same kind of birth. He did not know who his father was. He was the son of a maidservant. He was Dasiputra. So he did not know who his father, this devotee also. But Prabhupada accepted him as his son. His name is Haridas. So good name. And now he went off for a long time, and he was in the movies. He made some movies in Bombay, in Bollywood, and he was. Now he's retired now from his movie making business, and he's come to the temple and he's doing the TV serial called Atma. So just imagine the power of a pure devotee, that he had this background, doesn't know who his father is, but then Prabhupada became his father. So now he's got the best father of everyone. But Prabhupada accepted him, his name is on his passport, that A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, that's my father. Just imagine, huh? And he has his Prabhupada's signature right on his passport. Yeah, did you have a question? We have one more minute. We could... slowly? Yadu Dynasty, that was yesterday. What was that? Oh, I can't understand your question. Earth was burdened, yeah. Oh, Yadu dynasty, yeah. Oh, how was it burdened by Yadu dynasty? So just briefly, I'll just tell you that the Yadu dynasty, after Krishna left the planet, the Yadu dynasty was a burden because nobody could conquer them. They had so much power. And it was possible that they could misuse their power. They could become proud and puffed up, just like sometimes you hear in India that people say, oh, I'm the descendant of Nityananda, or I'm the descendant of this one. So there's millions of them, millions of Yadus. And if they were just left here without Krishna, they could actually make some trouble. So Krishna, I mean, that was just external reason why Krishna took, that's why they were a burden. But actually, to the earth, they were considered a burden of love because they were devotees. So in one sense, they could be a, but the real reason why Krishna took them is because he left and he wanted them to come. Actually, he sent them back before he went. 10 grandsons. So you can imagine how many it was. And so therefore he took them back. Otherwise it was possible they could have become proud and misused the power. These are some of the reasons given by the Acharyas. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow. You can read 37 to 39 or 40. Read up to 40. Hare Krishna.